to bring the four of you to the games. I have to go to her at the palace again after Friday classes, but at least I know my friends will be looked after. He glanced at each of them. Now have I earned your company? And the rest of my dinner? I'm starving. Tristan, Gisa, and Varys had arrived just before Ozorn. They rose to give him their most joking bows, then went to get their meals.
Stop frowning,
Ozorn told Aram as they dove into their beef tagine.
Not games, Aram whispered. I hate them.
Ozorn sighed.
You can't insult Mother, remember? Varys and I will distract you. You'll hardly know what's going on. And I left proper clothing in your room. You must dress well since we're on the Imperial stand.
Aram gulped. Ozorn gripped his shoulder.
It's a compliment, Featherhead.
You should have told me weeks ago,
Aram grumbled.
Don't worry,
Ozorn said.
We found a spot where you won't see too much blood.
All week Aram slept badly, dreaming of the female gladiator bleeding into the sands. Friday night, the dream changed. Musenda was surrounded by typhoid patients in gladiator gear. All the big man had for defense was a long rake used to shove bodies deeper into the fires. Musenda fought his attackers off frantically, but there were hundreds of them. His rake shattered. He fell to his knees, still trying to hold them back with a staff. Aram sat up in bed, sweating. Preet was chattering softly in his ear. Ozorn and Varys would notice if he hid somewhere, like the privies, to avoid the action on the stands. He would spell a couple of books so no one would see them and he could read all he wished. No, he couldn't. No one was allowed to use magic in the Emperor's presence. I'll take small books, he said, padding into the study to light a candle. He brought it into his room and used it to light the others. The sky was still dark. He scrubbed his face and combed his curls.
And shift my seat so my view is blocked, he murmured, thinking aloud.
Preet twittered in approval. Ozorn had brought an expensive cotton robe of a green shade that would make his skin look bruised. No doubt the color was fashionable. Ozorn would never deliberately pick something because it made his friend look ugly or ill. As he slid into it, Preet chirred a question.
Yes, you're coming, he told her softly.
The Emperor himself wants to meet you.
If the killing upsets you, let me know. I'll put you in my carry bag.
He wished he could fit in the carry bag. A soft knock sounded on his door.
Aram Dreeper.
It was a slave, clad only in a waistcloth. He wore a collar with the symbol of House Tasike. The man bowed and said,
Leave your carriage, and Mistress Varys waiting.
Varys stood beside the carriage. She took his breath away, she was so lovely. Her northern-style gown of bright yellow silk clung until it reached the chain belt at her hips, where the skirt flared. A white gossamer undergown showed above the low silk neckline. Her hair was braided and pinned with bronze beads that matched those in her pearl and bronze belt. Varys stroked Preet's head.
I see Tristan and Gisa.
She stood on her tiptoes and waved, as the slave stowed Aram's bag tidily on top of the carriage. Preet chuckled to herself, including tiny hissing noises. Aram smiled. Preet always hissed when she saw Tristan. Aram thought the sound was her name for him. Within a few moments, they were all four comfortably disposed inside. Aram and Varys on either side of a good-sized covered basket, Gisa and Tristan riding on the backward-facing seat. Varys produced four cups and a flat-bottomed teapot from her basket. As soon as the carriage rolled forward, she began to pour. She did not spill a drop. Tristan rubbed his hands, grinning with eagerness.
I have to create a proper thank-you gift for Prince Ozorn, he said. I've wanted to see the Imperial Arena since I was a pup. Varys, if you have ideas...
He nudged Aram with his foot.
Come on, Stork Boy, aren't you excited?
He took the cup Varys offered him. Aram glared at Tristan and accepted his own cup from Varys. He didn't like Tristan's nicknames for him. Lately, he constantly made jokes at Aram's expense. All in fun, he often said. I probably have a friend in the games today, if it's the same to you. Aram gulped back the contents of his cup.
Which gladiator, Aram?
Kisa asked.
We can leave offerings to the gods for him.
Aram smiled at her. Kisa was all right. Musenda, he replied. He's a third ranker. They'll probably just keep him for the mass fights. He told them how the big man had saved him when he was 10.
I know his name, Varys said. He's ascending. The gamblers think he may even beat Valor one day.
Valor? Aram asked.
Big Scanran, Tristan replied. Muscles like boulders. Truly frightening.
Stop it, Varys ordered. Musenda's a Third Order fighter. Valor only goes against First and Second Orders. He's the Imperial Champion, the hero of the arena.
Those people are animals, Tristan said disdainfully. They live to fight and kill. It's all they're good for. You'll see.
Aram stroked Preet, who sang softly. Eventually the carriage shifted. Varys gasped and nearly spilled her tea.
We're turning! Put back your curtain!
They all did as ordered. They had reached the Avenue of Heroes. Ancient trees on both sides offered shade and rest to weary walkers. Between them towered statues of Karthak's greatest generals and warriors. Crowds on foot lined the roads. These people had left the city before dawn to reach the arena. Aram had a foggy recollection of it all. Much of it was centered on his memory of the elephant and the blood and his vomiting, or the huge torchlit walls and the insides of stone. Now he would be on top of the rocks he had helped to mend, and far above the elephants and the fighters. Tristan nudged him with his boot.
Why the glum face? He demanded. We have a beautiful day, beautiful company.
He smiled at Kisa, but his eyes flicked to Varys.
And excitement ahead. Look!
He pointed out the window on his side. There rose the white stone oval of the great arena. Aram's belly clenched. Soon enough, the roar of those already inside the huge structure swamped them. Aram tucked Preet into a pouch in the drape that fit his arm. As Imperial guests, they drove through both outer gates without stopping, and into the tunnel that led to the Imperial section. The clatter of hooves and wheels made all of them grimace. Despite the noise, Aram hung half out the window. He could feel the marble, the mixture of his magic and Yadin's, too powerful to have faded completely. He could even feel Chioke's power near the tunnel's entrance to the arena. Once they halted, their coachman and the slave who had carried their things opened the doors and helped them to step down. The two young women wished each other a wonderful time, while Tristan patted Aram's cheek.
Try to uphold the honor of the university, he said with his most engaging smile.
He offered Kisa his arm and led her toward the noble seating, their tickets in his hand. Imperial slaves in crimson waistcloths and gilded sandals took Varys's basket and Aram's bag. Aram would have tipped the cart's driver, but one of the slaves saw his motion and shook his head.
It is the pleasure of Princess Mahira to see to the comfort of the slaves, he murmured to Aram.
Her Highness is so kind to mere students, Varys said, linking her arm with Aram's.
On the left side of the tunnel wall, hanging over it as it sloped down toward the top of the arena itself, dozens of people sat or leaned, watching each new arrival and cheering the ones they knew. They threw flowers or shouted jests and jeers to everyone who passed under their review. Varys inspired a cacophony of appreciative whistles and pleas for a smile from the pretty lady. Aram was teased for his height and his silly bird, drawing returning insults from Preet. She produced gales of laughter when she gave them her unmistakable imitation of a series of farts. Aram shielded his eyes, ashamed and smiling at the same time. Then he heard someone yell his name. He looked up and saw three familiar faces. Pinta and her two brothers, Musenda's niece and nephews, waving frantically to him. He waved back and shouted a greeting. Their guide was glaring at him.
"We must clear the way, sir. The Emperor will arrive soon. We cannot block his advance."
Aram looked up at the children, pointed to the servant and Varys, and shrugged. The children shouted farewells as their mother pulled them back. She and Aram traded waves before she walked out of view, and he half-trotted to catch up with his guide and Varys.
"Who were those people?" Varys asked.
She was already wielding a fan Ozorn had given her for midwinter. The day was promising to be unusually warm for April.
"Musenda's family," Aram explained. "Remember I told you they were at the plague house? I juggled for the children."
"I do remember. Too bad he wasn't there to greet you with them," Varys sighed. "From the times I've seen him, he's gorgeous. So powerful."
"And kind," Aram said, not liking that she knew his friend only in terms of the arena sands. "He didn't have to save my life when I was 10, or care for his brother's family." Varys looked at him as they emerged into the sunlight.
"Aram," she said quietly, "my dear, it's not good to care for a gladiator."
"Why do you think I hate the games?" he asked, his voice soft.
Inside the stone oval of the main arena, seats were arranged in four great tiers, with the most expensive at the lowest level. Aram and Varys followed their guide up a stair onto the imperial stand, three broad shallow platforms isolated from the rest of the audience by a crimson silk cover high overhead. Many nobles and their servants had already arrived, including Ozorn. He approached with outstretched hands and a broad smile.
"Mithros be thanked, you're here,"
he greeted them. He kissed Varys, once for each cheek, and clasped one of Aram's shoulders, unusual signs of favor. Of the three of them, Ozorn was the least given to displays of affection. He gave the slave who carried their things a hand signal and tucked one of Varys's hands under his arm.
"Aram, will Preet go with the slave?" he asked. "Just until you've greeted Mother. She is not interested in birds, not like His Imperial Majesty."
He indicated a female slave wearing the insignia of House Tesike.
"Behave and let this woman carry you to our place," Aram told Preet softly. To the slave he said, "She won't peck or bite."
She reached out a strong arm. Gently, Aram held his wrist so the bird could walk over. "Her name is Preet," he said. The slave bowed and followed the other slave across the second platform. Ozorn gave an imperious tug to Aram's drape to straighten it.
"Come along," he demanded.
As they stepped down to the first platform, he said quietly,
"Mother is having a bad day. I want everything to go smoothly."
"Why didn't she just stay home?" Varys asked.
Ozorn grimaced.
"Not when Cousin Stillowit is taking the Western Navy out for the summer. It's a great honor for him, the Emperor presenting games in his honor. It shows he approves of Stillowit as the official heir after Mikrom. Mikrom must have done something to make His Imperial Majesty angry. So it's a very touchy Imperial thing, and Mother and I must attend." "You never had to go to games before," Aram murmured.
He could feel the hum of fresh magic, Yadin's again, and more powerfully that of Chioke. He glanced around and saw the two masters seated to one side of the imperial throne. Startled, he realized he felt the masters' personal gifts, power that was as much a part of them as their muscles and bones. They were not using it. The power was simply there. "Can they sense me like this? Or Varys?" he wondered.
"I was never third in line for the festering throne before,"
Ozorn was whispering.
And Stillowit wasn't second in line. Apparently he said unprincely things when Uncle ordered him to attend these games. You see why he spends so much time at sea, don't you? He'd rather bathe in tar than live a day here.
They had reached the princess's station, a short step down from the dais. Mahira sat at a table decked with flowers, food, and a gold pitcher glistening with drops of water. A woman Aram recognized as the princess's personal slave stood at her elbow. Ozorn leaned down and kissed his mother's cheek. She had been staring out over the arena sands, her amber eyes distant.
Mother, do you remember my friends? Varys Kingsford?
Varys curtsied.
And Aram Draper.
Aram bowed and clutched his drape as it slithered off his shoulder. Straightening, he met the princess's flat stare. It was plain that she did not exactly remember him.
He has the touch of the Sirajit about him,
the princess murmured, her voice icy.
Mother, that's not true,
Ozorn protested. I was born in Tira, Your Highness, Aram reminded her. My family has lived in Tira for 5 generations.
A Tiran will lie down with anyone, she replied, as will a Sirajit swine. Their breed wallows everywhere and goes on breeding.
Why are people always nasty about pigs? Aram wondered, ignoring her accusation, even distant, about his family's sexual habits. He had learned to ignore insults about his family. It was the first subject people chose when they wished to upset him. Since they could not know his family, it meant nothing. Ozorn flicked his eyes to the body slave, who filled a cup from the pitcher. Aram saw magic swirl faintly in the liquid as the woman knelt beside the princess and wrapped her hand around the cup. He frowned. No one was allowed to use magic so close to anything connected to the Emperor. Ozorn lowered a flattened hand, their private signal for later.
Aram is a mage of great talent, Mother, he said gently as the princess sipped from the cup. If he doesn't set himself on fire trying to light a candle, he should do great things one day. He is not from conquered Siraj. Any ruler will be glad to have him or Varys at his court.
The princess took a deep breath and let it out. Her thin body, so tense a moment before, relaxed.
Yes, Varys. You do so well with food, elixirs, and poisons, my dear, she said. Her smile was more lifelike, her eyes dreamier. I understand. I have you to thank for this.
She waved her free hand toward the pitcher. Aram stared at Varys. Neither she nor Ozorn had said she was working on an elixir for the princess, let alone one that would change the drinker's mood. Varys was blushing.
It was both of us, Ozorn and me, she said.
I watched, Ozorn said. Mother never would have accepted the gift otherwise. Varys did the rest.
It may well be that one day I shall offer you a post in my house, the princess said. If you cook as well as you fashion drinks to ease an old widow's heart.
All three of them protested against her claim to being old, which made her smile.
And I shall need no elixir to make me peaceful when I know my lord husband is avenged, shall I, my son?
Ozorn whispered in his mother's ear. Aram bent down to tell Varys softly,
We aren't allowed to give medicines to people.
Varys flicked her fan open and held it to shield her mouth as she replied,
Chioke said I could if he supervised. Are you jealous because I got to do something special?
No, Aram said a little too loudly, enough to draw the attention of some nearby guests.
No, he repeated softly. But you never told me.
That hurt. Varys had done a magical thing for Ozorn's mother, and neither she nor Ozorn had mentioned it,
let alone invited him to the crafting of it. Trumpets blared in the entry tunnel, announcing the approach of an heir to the imperial throne. The princess nodded to indicate Aurum and Varice were dismissed. Ozorn's wry smile told them that he had to remain with his mother for the time being.
"You could have said something," Aurum went on as they returned to their table.
Preet sat beside a plate of grapes, glaring balefully at both humans for leaving her.
"I was scared it wouldn't work," Varice replied.
"It was just before examinations. None of us could think of anything else. It's only a little potion to relax her when she broods, that's all. I started with a tea that healers give new mothers when they're overwrought. It's women's magic. Nobody cares about women's magic."
"My heavens, isn't Stillowit handsome? I had forgotten."
She shook her head. "He probably doesn't even remember dancing with me that time." She glanced at Aurum.
"I think you told me he did just to make me feel good."
The Admiral was dismounting from a spirited horse. Once in view of the crowds, he stood for a moment, arms raised as they shouted approval. Today he wore a purple robe and an elegant deep blue drape, but Aurum couldn't help but think he would be far more comfortable in a sailor's canvas breeches and hardy shirt. He could see that Stillwit wasn't as at ease here as he had been in the plague infirmary. With a final slight bow to the people in the stands, the Admiral turned and saw Princess Mahira.
"My very dearest aunt and my mage cousin!"
His voice had a carrying quality that Aurum thought must be audible across the arena. It would be a very useful thing at sea, or for an emperor. Stillowit walked over to Mahira to kiss her hands, then her cheeks. He kissed Ozorn on each cheek as well. Varice leaned close to Aurum.
"Doesn't he know Ozorn dislikes to be touched unless he invites it?"
Remembering the Admiral's humorous eyes, Aurum said,
"I doubt His Highness cares."
As the princess spoke to him, the Admiral let his eyes roam until they halted on Varice. They brightened.
"He does remember you,"
Aurum murmured. Varice elbowed him discreetly. Ozorn, noticing the prince's inspection, waved Varice and Aurum over.
"The young Mistress Varice,"
Stillowit said. He lifted Varice's hand and kissed it, his lips lingering. Varice blushed. Aurum and Ozorn both did their best to hide bristles.
"My beautiful dancer! So delightful to see you again!"
"Lady Varice Kingsford, Aurum Draper and I are students at the Upper Academy of the School for Mages,"
Ozorn told Stillowit smoothly. Varice curtsied. Aurum bowed.
"But cousin, I have met this young man during the plague,"
Stillowit said. He gave Aurum a quick, strong embrace.
"It is good to see you, alive and well,"
he remarked quietly, letting Aurum step back.
"Did they keep you much longer after we met?"
"Just 3 more days, Your Imperial Highness,"
Aurum replied, his cheeks hot. He wasn't sure that he liked being touched by relative strangers any more than Ozorn did. "Actually, all 3 of us worked during the plague, Varice in medicines and Ozorn transporting them."
"I saw my cousin Ozorn after I met you that day,"
Stillowit replied.
"He was not his usual well-dressed self, and if I had known the young lady was at work nearby, I would have paid my respects."
He caught up Varice's hand and gave it a second kiss, then released it.
"Perhaps I should recruit 3 such crafty folk to my navy."
Varice laughed.
"You would have to wait for Aurum's help on naval matters, Your Highness."
She placed a comforting hand on Aurum's arm.
"His gifts are more in the way of healing and spell work, though he does walk on the bottoms of rivers."
Her touch gave Aurum courage.
"Indeed, I am the worst possible mage for the exercise of war, Your Highness," he said, trembling at his own boldness. "If I try to light even a small blaze, it goes anywhere but the target."
Stillowit chuckled.
Rivers aren't for the likes of me. Give me the sea and a strong wind any day.
He raised an eyebrow at Ozorn.
And you, Your Highness, are you a student of disease and river bottoms?
Aurum bit the inside of his cheek to still his fury. The man might be a prince and an admiral, but he shouldn't insult a fellow heir. Ozorn's answer to his cousin was drowned out by the thunder of drums that announced the Emperor's arrival. Everyone took their places. Chapter 15. April to May 15th, 438. As the Emperor stepped up onto the first platform, everyone, even Stillowit, knelt. A rumble echoed through the arena, as all those beyond did the same, from the vendors to the watchers on the upper heights. Aurum had seen Masarez, Avivan, Tasike before, but always from a distance. This was his first chance to observe their ruler closely. He sneaked a look at the master of the vastness that was the Empire of Karthak. Riding an elephant, armored and crowned in gold and, for those mageborn who could see it, glittering with spells for protection and for show, he was a creature out of myth. Afoot, he was a dumpy, pale-skinned Tasike of Ozorn's height, raised by gilded black pearl-studded sandals with soles 3 inches thick. His crown, a cap of gold trimmed with silver and assorted gems, sat on thin white hair that had been combed straight back and cropped to the length of his earlobes. A black silk robe stitched with rubies and a scarlet drape bordered in gold did not distract a close viewer from the Emperor's chubby cheeks, his pudgy nose, and the pouches under his dull brown eyes. His mouth was petulant rather than masterful. And yet, except for the Great Sarajit War 23 years ago, he had kept the Empire at peace for the years of his reign, or at least, Aurum thought, peace as the Empire defined it. After Ozorn's father had crushed the Sarajit Uprising, the army spent their time breaking up tribal wars and noble feuds, subduing robbers and pirates who hunted without imperial approval. This doughy-looking man had survived at least 9 assassination attempts that Aurum knew of, and restored the Empire's treasuries and granaries to a state of health unknown in the history of the 5 rulers before him. Which just goes to show that looks aren't everything, Aurum decided. After all, Sibo, tiny and old as she was more respected than almost any other mage at the university, even Cosmas. As drums pounded and trumpets blared in the arena, a slave selected different fruits and set them on plates, then added small cups of sauce. Varys giggled when she saw that Aurum regarded the serving process with mistrust.
You dunk a bite of fruit in a cup, silly. It makes the taste more sophisticated.
She speared a grape on a thin-bladed knife and looked at the 3 small cups.
This is tamarind syrup. This one is cherry, and this, I am sure, is lime with...
She dipped her grape and tucked it into her mouth before the syrup could drip onto her dress.
Mmm, cinnamon, she said with approval.
Because Varys was watching, he dipped a piece of fig into the tamarind sauce and smiled as the tastes filled his mouth.
You should get to know different flavors, alone and mixed, Varys told him soberly. We can be brought low by a common poison if we don't know when something wrong is added to our food and drink. Our gifts won't warn us unless, of course, you know your poisons.
He listened to her as he watched the parade of gladiators walk the arena. He could hardly bear to see the elephants, horses, and big cats. He hated to think of the injuries that would come to them in the battles that would soon begin. A sudden thought shocked him to the bone.
I could leave Karthak when I'm a master. I'd never have to think about the games again.
He fed Preet to hide his confusion from Varys. A young noble had come to speak to her, drawing her eyes away from Aurum. More thoughts crowded in.
Leave Varys? He looked over to see Ozorn fanning his mother.
Leave Ozorn? After promising we would stay together? I can't. They're my real family.
Preet, as always, sensed his distress and began to babble softly. He smiled down at her, thinking how lucky he was to have her company. He was getting carried away. When we're all in one household, Ozorn won't press me to attend the games. And how can I abandon Lindhall or Sibo or Cosmos, let alone Karthak, when I've hardly seen any of it? He was letting his imagination run away with him. Carefully, he reached for his bag stowed under the table and opened it. A book, that's what I need right now. And my... He groped wildly, first in one pocket, then two more. Where were his earplugs? Did he forget them? The first game was announced. A battle between wildcats and warriors on horseback. Varys said farewell to her guest and leaned over to Aram. She reached out one arm, her hand in a fist. Take these, she said in Old Thak. Be discreet. It's considered rude. She lowered her hand so the table hid it. Aram slid his palm under her fist. She dropped two wax earplugs into his hand. She had also brought a deck of cards. Here, play with me, she directed. Aram left one ear unplugged so he could hear her as they played. When she lost the first game, she sighed and said, My luck has to improve, doesn't it? Will you wager? Aram smiled as Preet scolded Varys. He waited for the bird to fall silent before he said, You won't catch me that way. Ozorn tells me what a fine gambler you are. Varys pouted. Still another game? Aram nodded and rose to stretch. Seeing that the first combat was over and slaves were out clearing the sands, he removed his other earplug and walked down to the rail. Directly opposite the Emperor's place, on the far side of the arena, was a great statue of Mithros, covered in gold. In this guise, the god wore only the kilt and belt of the gladiator. He brandished the short sword and round shield that were the first implements gladiators learned to use. Over the imperial seats, on top of the roof, was a statue of Karthak's patroness, the graveyard hag, with a dice cup in one bony hand. She wore a black robe and hood that hid her features. The great mother goddess was nowhere to be seen in this temple of killing and death, Aram observed.
I see you smuggled your bird in.
Master Chioke had joined him.
Does her highness mind?
I left Preet at our table when we greeted her highness, master, Aram replied politely. But I'm not so disrespectful as to smuggle Preet. His Imperial Majesty asked to see her today. The rumor that Chioke might be a good choice as head of the school for mages, should Master Cosmos retire, was persistent these days. Aram hoped he would be gone by then. Not only did he love Cosmos, but Chioke seemed too interested in the world outside the university. Ever since he had become one of Chioke's students, Ozorn spent a great deal of time thinking about the world as well. More personally, Aram had not forgiven Chioke for the day he had pushed Aram to throw fire until the lightning snakes came. He had nothing against the lightning snakes, other than that they were as unnerving as Enzi, but he hated to be pressed. The master looked at the gates opening across the arena.
Ah, the next bout. We should return to our seats.
Yet he remained, looking at Aram.
Ozorn and Varys are very lucky to have such a talented and closed-mouthed friend.
I'm shy, Aram replied, thinking, if he oozes much more, he will be able to skid back to his place.
Yes, I know, but not invincible or infallible. Just a lad yet.
Aram bowed before he glared at the man. Excuse me, Master Chioke. Varys is waving. He waved at Varys, so she would do the same when the older mage looked. Quickly he trotted back to her and plopped into his chair. The slaves were setting out more substantial dishes that Varys had brought.
"What did Master Ambition want?"
Varys asked after the slaves moved away. Arm turned his chair so his back was to the arena and tore up bits of bread for Preet.
"I have no idea, and I don't care. Master Ambition is the perfect name."
He saw her eyes brighten at the action on the ground and said,
"Go ahead and watch. I can read."
She got to her feet.
"Aram, look! Isn't that your friend, Musinda? It looks like he has a single fight! He's moving up!"
She picked up her skirts and ran down to the rail. The lords and ladies there made room for her without looking away from the men and women who had marched onto the sands. Aram stood, feeling sick. An arena guard pointed a spear with a bright red flag at the tip at a gladiator in the front of the small group on the sands. It was indeed Musinda. He would fight, and perhaps die, in full view of his sister-in-law and the children. The grand crier, who announced all the events through a horn from the imperial stand at the emperor's feet, shouted,
"Of the first single match, from the bold warriors of the third rank!"
He was interrupted by a trumpet blast. The gate at the gladiator's end of the arena opened, and a leather-armored man rode out on a beautifully steel-armored horse. He galloped up to the imperial pavilion.
"That's Valor."
Yadin had come to stand next to Aram.
"The great killer, or, should I say, champion of the games."
"Valor does not wait!"
the big man shouted up to the crier.
"Valor chooses his foes. Valor does not sit like a girl who waits for a lover. Valor will battle now!"
The crier looked up at the imperial dais. There was a long, terrible pause. Aram couldn't see the emperor or Silhouette.
"Does not wait, my rock hammer,"
Yadin remarked scornfully, causing Aram to choke on the water he was drinking.
"He chooses a younger, less experienced gladiator from the third rank. He'll draw out the fight, make it look good, and then afterward, he will say he took some small injury that prevents his taking on anyone else. His hopeful opponents of the first and second ranks are the ones who must wait."
He looked at Aram, who was trembling.
"The third ranker, Musinda Ugansanwo, that's your friend, isn't it?"
Aram nodded. The grand crier bellowed,
"Valor has his wish! He will fight Musinda Ugansanwo of the third rank!"
Yadin placed a gentle hand on Aram's shoulder.
"Pray. If there are any particular gods with whom you have a bond, now would be a good time to call on them."
That was Enzi, but Aram didn't think the crocodile god could have any influence on the games. He was about to silently address Mithros until he remembered Preet. If the god was not here today, it would be disastrous to bring his attention to the sunbird fledgling napping on his shoulder. He pleaded with Hakaja to keep his friend uninjured or mendably injured. Gods asked horrible prices of those who prayed for the impossible. After he watched Valor dismount and trade his costly armor for the plain greaves and breastplate of a third-rank gladiator, Aram looked up. He could have sworn the statue of the graveyard hag had been staring directly across the arena at her sister goddess, Hakaja. Now she was looking down at the imperial pavilion. No, she was turning her head to look directly at him. She winked. A noise of alarm struggled to escape his throat. He closed his eyes, hoping he dreamed. When he opened them again, the statue was in its normal position. Aram tried to relax and reached for the glass he had placed on his table. Instead, his hand landed on something far smaller, with angles. He picked it up
and looked at it. It was a clear crystal dice cube with numbers picked out in tiny spots of garnet. He prayed it was garnet and not his first morbid guess that it was blood. Yadin was speaking to him.
If you wish to turn around, I can sit here so no one in the imperial seats will be able to see you.
Aram smiled weakly at his teacher. I owe it to Musenda to watch. He clutched the hag's die in his hand. Preet hopped to his shoulder and hummed softly in his ear. The fighters moved to the center of the arena, and the grand crier bellowed,
In the name of Mithros and the Emperor, do battle!
The distance made it easier for a short time. The two men looked like miniatures, not human beings. Valor was shorter than Musenda, but he was built like a bull, with arms, chest, and legs thicker even than his foes. They used small, round shields and short swords meant, Aram assumed, to bring them closer and draw blood quickly. Twice Musenda caught Valor's shield edge on the guard of his blade. He used the brief catch to knock Valor's sword from his hand and bash Valor's face before the older man threw himself backward, freeing his shield, grabbing his weapon, and rolling to his feet at a slight distance from Musenda. The third time Musenda tried the shield catch, Valor threw arena dust he had seized when he fell into the younger gladiator's face. Blinded, Musenda raised his arms to clear his vision. Valor stabbed him in a long, shallow cut along the ribs. Aram turned his head away, his lips trembling, then made himself look. His friend was out there. If he could give Musenda some of his power, he would. He wished he could give him some of his will. On the fight went. Valor knocked Musenda's shield out of his grip and yards away. After an attempt or two to retrieve it, Musenda didn't try again. He lunged and dodged, moving fast and keeping Valor moving. It began to cost the champion after a time. Even Aram could see it. Still, he made Musenda pay, a cut here and a cut there. Aram wished it would end and prayed it would not. Musenda tumbled and fell on his back. Aram leaped to his feet, clutching his gift to him tighter than he ever had in his life, fighting to keep it under control when all of him wanted to pick Valor up and dump him out of the arena. Preet hung on to his ear with her beak, but the pain did not register. Yadin's grip on his arm helped a little as Valor charged Musenda, both hands gripping his sword's hilt, the weapon raised above his head, ready to stab down. It was done. Aram knew it was done. At the very last moment, Valor was almost on top of Musenda when the younger gladiator twisted, slashing backhand down and across Valor's bulging, powerful thigh. The champion shrieked in agony and went down face first. He rolled onto his back, still screaming, as Musenda took the sword from his grip and stood. The crowd went mad. They had gone from shrieking their adoration of the champion to demanding that Musenda kill him. Musenda shook his head and held the sword so that it pointed downward. Trembling, Aram looked at Yadin.
"Does that mean something?"
he croaked. He must have been shouting for his friend if his voice was so hoarse. Yadin was on his feet, too.
"It means he wants to let Valor live."
Aram looked at Musenda's many cuts.
"Could you do that?"
The maid shrugged.
"It's different out there, on the sands."
The Emperor stepped down to the platform next to the Grand Crier, and the crowd went silent. He beckoned Stillowit forward and held his hand out to his second heir.
"He gives the prince the honor of the choice,"
Yadin explained to Aram. Stillowit held his own hand out, palm up, then turned it palm down. The crowd roared so loudly that the stone under Aram's feet trembled. Musenda raised his own sword-bearing arm and drove the short blade into the ground of the arena. The rear gate opened. Healers ran out with a long piece of canvas secured between two long poles. One of them bandaged the big slash in Valor's leg to stop the bleeding before they loaded the wounded man onto the carrier and took him from the field. Musenda followed them, limping, as the crowd screamed his name over and over. Yadin was grinning.
Well done, he said. Very well done. I see why you like him. I mean to leave an offering to Mithros to keep him alive.
He grimaced.
Chioke wants me. Will you be all right?
Aram nodded as he sank into his chair. He was not going to be sick, despite the blood the two men had spilled, but he was snake-eaten if he would watch any more of these things. And his hand was aching fiercely. He unclenched it to reveal that the goddess's dye had pressed its outline deep into his palm because he had clutched it hard. Had the graveyard hag blessed Musinda? And why? He looked up at the goddess's statue. To his horror, she blew a kiss at him before she returned to her usual position. Ozorn came for Aram as workers were cleaning the sands of bloodstains.
Good. You haven't vomited, he joked. Uncle and Stillowit would like to see Preet.
The horrors of this day will never end, Aram thought, getting to his feet. Ozorn rearranged Aram's hair.
Oh, wonderful. You're using that oil I gave you.
While Aram checked his robe for spots and groomed Preet to put her in her sunniest mood. As they walked over to the Imperial dais, Ozorn said,
I'm impressed by your friend Musinda. Valor is a crafty old dog, and he's pulled that I'll fight now trick too many times. In fact, I'd say he pulled it one too many times.
How is he? Aram inquired, trying not to trip. Does anyone know?
I'll find out if you like,
his friend offered. Aram could only nod. They had reached the dais.
Now remember,
Ozorn said quietly.
Bow to the Emperor first, Stillowit second. Bow very low to the Emperor. If he points the scepter at the ground, kneel. Don't talk until he says you may.
Aram barely remembered his audience, except for his shakes and Preet's success at charming the old man. Stillowit seemed to guess that the conversation was a test. He only mentioned that they had met at the plague infirmary where Aram worked very hard. Ozorn told him later that the Emperor had asked about his family and his plans for the future. There, at least, Aram had done the correct thing, saying that he meant to study as much as he could at the university because there were so many things he needed to learn. Apparently, the Emperor was so pleased with his response that he gave Aram a purse of gold Bacchus with which to advance your studies. When Ozorn walked him back to his table, Aram promised himself that he would not leave it again unless he absolutely had to use the privy. The afternoon was well along when Varys collapsed into her chair and deposited a heap of coins onto her napkin. Interested, Aram removed one earplug.
You were wagering?
I found some dolts, she replied smugly. The woman with the tiger was obviously going to win. I don't care how mighty those big strong men who fought them looked to be. There were only two bouts remaining when Varys noticed that a slave wished to speak to them.
Yes,
she asked, very much an imperious Karthaki lady. Aram wondered where she had learned the manner. She had always been a good mimic.
It is the young master, the slave replied with a bow. It is irregular, but his imperial majesty has granted permission, if the young master is willing.
Aram stared at the slave, confused. Preet pecked him out of his fog.
How?
Preet!
If I am willing to do what?
If the young master is willing, the gladiator Musinda Ogunsanwo asks if he may have speech with you.
Varys leaped up, clapping her hands together.
Speech! Aram! He wants to talk with you! Where is he?
Aram blinked. With all the heat, the smells, and the noise stuffing his head, it took him a moment to realize what was being asked of him. He said faintly,
Yes,
Where is Musinda?
The slave pointed.
In the tunnel.
As if they needed to be reassured, the slave added hurriedly,
He is chained and guarded. You will be safe.
Aram glared at the man. He is a human being, not an animal. Furthermore, he is a friend of mine. The slave took a breath, then bowed and said nothing. It was Varys who said,
No, Aram, I've heard some of them can be savage after a match. They work themselves up to such a state to fight. It's not safe to talk to them unless they're in their cages or chained.
She tugged his hand.
Let's go see him.
Aram tugged back. Cages? He asked, outraged. They live in cages? Preet chattered in alarm. Aram realized that people were turning to look at them. He ground his teeth and followed Varys and the slave down to the tunnel. There loomed Musinda, covered in sweat and chained at his throat, hands, and feet. He wore bandages over several of his wounds, all of them glittered with magical treatments. Three men in armor with the arena's insignia held his chains. They wore heavy leather gloves and carried batons.
It's all right, lady, one of them told Varys. He don't go mad after his combats like some.
Musinda grinned at Aram and offered a chained hand.
You look like you've been eating better than the last time I saw you.
His voice was rough, doubtless from shouting in the arena, Aram thought.
It's good to see you, Aram replied.
You had me worried out there.
He reached for the man's hand.
Here, none of that,
a guard said, shoving his baton between Aram and Musinda. Aram trembled. He wasn't sure if it was from fear of the guards or fury at learning those who risked their lives in the games lived in cages.
Don't be ridiculous, he said, his voice shaking. We've met before. He won't harm me.
He took Musinda's hand.
It's very good to see you.
The audience in the stands was bellowing. The second-to-last match was about to begin. Musinda's captors shifted restlessly.
When I saw you up there, I knew you'd be luck for me,
the big man said. He grinned.
But I'm a rude monkey. I haven't greeted this beautiful lady.
Varys laughed.
I'm Varys Kingsford. I'm Aram's friend and your admirer.
She offered Musinda a small purse.
I won a bit of money on your match, and I feel I must share. For one thing, Aram told me you support your sister-in-law and her children.
Musinda bowed, his chains clanking, and accepted the purse.
You're very kind, great lady. My family can always use whatever I earn.
Varys blushed.
I'm no great lady, just a mage student like Aram.
Mage students who sit with the Imperial family,
Musinda remarked. Our friend and his mother invited us, Aram said, trying to understand the wary look in the big man's eyes.
Surely you mean Her Highness Mahira Lymanis Tasike and His Highness Ozorn Muhasin Tasike,
one of the guards said.
Great ones of the Empire.
Now Aram understood the look in Musinda's eyes. He'd been trying to warn Aram about the way he spoke of members of the Imperial family.
You're right, he said, looking at his feet. I wasn't thinking. Musinda has to go back to camp, said the guard who had reproved Aram.
Yes, of course, Varys replied. And we should rejoin our hosts.
Please tell your family I said hello again. Aram said as Varys tugged his arm. I saw them this morning. They look much better out of the infirmary.
Aram! Varys tugged harder. Young masters, Princess Mahira asks for you.
One of the princess's slaves was leaning over the iron rail between the platforms and the edge of the tunnel.
You must return to your places at once.
Musinda said,
Gods go with you, Aram.
Good to meet you, Lady Varys.
He nodded to the men who held his chains. They began the process of turning so the four could leave through the tunnel without getting entangled with one another. As they walked off, Aurum remembered his manners and called, "Graveyard Hag, bless your future games!" Musenda raised a hand as far as he could, but did not turn around. Aurum and Varys returned to bow to Princess Mahira and chat with her again when the next match, a grand brawl between gladiators from the third and fourth groups, was over. "It's just as Master Sibo says," Aurum decided during their ride home. "Each bit of stone tossed into the river creates ripples, which create still more, which intersect with other ripples, each making a new pattern in the water. There is no way to tell what might result once you pick up a stone and throw it. We can only be ready for where the power takes us." He turned the crystal die over and over in his fingers. He almost wished he'd given it to Musenda. A gladiator was far better off with a token from the graveyard hag than a student was. Once he was home, Aurum was careful to write perfect, unblotted thank you notes to the Emperor, Stillowit, Princess Mahira, Ozorn, and Varys. When it was dark and Preet was sound asleep, Aurum did a quick sneak to the nearest shrine for Mithros with a donation for permanently damaged gladiators in Musenda's name. Also, with considerable nervousness, he offered one of his favorite finished stones, a lovely piece of amber, to the graveyard hag, just in case. In class the next day, he showed the die to Yadin. The mage picked it up and instantly dropped it. Aurum, in an unusual fit of grace, caught the piece before it touched the ground. "Sir?" he asked. Yadin never dropped anything. Yadin plunged his hand into a bucket of water.
"Where did you get that?"
"Well, the, Aurum stammered, catching a fiery look from the master. He said,
At the games?"
"Who gave it to you?"
"Master, I don't know."
"I have never met this master I don't know. Whoever he is, I doubt he wanders through battle games giving away diamond dice studded with garnets. Who gave it to you?"
Not for the first time in their relationship, Aurum thought that Yadin had a very intimidating glare.
"Master, truly, I don't know."
He took a deep breath, summoning his courage while Preet scolded Yadin.
"Stop it, Preet."
"Sir, I was looking at the Lady of the South statue in the arena." Those who did not wish to offend or get the attention of the hag used her far more polite name, taken from the usual position of her statues. "And I thought she was moving, and that appeared on my table."
"It is most certainly from her,"
Yadin replied sourly.
"Take very good care of it. Keep it with you, and hope that she continues to like you."
"Absolutely," Aurum replied, wiping the sweat from his forehead and remembering the way his spine had tried to crawl out through his skull when she had winked at him. Yadin shook his head.
"I have never known such a student for getting himself into strange situations. First a peculiar birdie, and now a die from Karthak's own goddess. This one thing is true. Your future is written in fire."
Aurum stared at the master, hurt. "I don't try to get into bad situations, Master Yadin." The man snorted.
"We are making jewelry today, young mage. Protective jewelry with protective stones for a nice, manly bracelet. We'll wrap your die in a gold wire cage and attach it to the bracelet if you like."
Aurum nodded eagerly. He was terrified that the thing would fall from a pocket or get stolen from his room.
"Start with the proper metal chain to string it and your beads."
Yadin held up a bead.
Here's the proper size of bead to use, so be sure to get the proper size of chain.